Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Stone Chapel Podcast. I'm David Capes. As of July 2024, we are joining the Church Leaders Podcast Network. Now, we don't want to lose touch with any of you who listen to this podcast all across the world, but we will have to migrate to a new platform. Now, please write this down. All right, get a pen, take a minute. All right, turn it off if you need to, come back. Here it is. churchleaders.com/podcast network. churchleaders.com/podcast network. Check it out. It's already up and running. They've got great podcasts there by people like Ed Stetzer, Eric Geiger, and Derwin Gray. It's really geared to helping church leaders. Now, we're doing a lot of theology here, talking to authors, but you need more than good theology. You've got to have some practical advice and practical guidance. And that's part of what this podcast network is all about. Jonathan Brandt joins us on the Stone Chapel Podcast today to talk about a massive initiative that he is directing out of Oxford, England. I called it Rebirth 2.0. See what you might call it. So today, scholar, writer, educator, Jonathan Brandt on the Stone Chapel Podcast.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Brandt. I'm the Dean for Research and Cultural Engagement at Wycliffe Hall, Oxford University, and also the director of the Renaissance Project.
Dr. Jonathan Brandt. Jonathan, good to see you. Welcome to the Stone Chapel Podcast.
Yeah, it's lovely to be here with you.
Well, we are face-to-face. Last time we saw you, we were on the other side, your side of the pond, as the saying goes, in Wycliffe Hall, and we got a chance to say hello briefly to you while we were there at Yarnton. Yeah. And now you're here because you've been here for a conference called the Christian Scholars Conference at the Lanier Theological Library in Houston. Mm-hmm. It's been a good conference so far.
It's been fantastic. I've really enjoyed the speakers and the people that are here.
Well, one of the best speeches I've heard was by you yesterday, talking about hope, a good bit about hope in the midst of crises, and about the Renaissance Project. But for those who don't know, who is Jonathan Brandt?
So my name is Jonathan. As I say, I have a wife, Tricia, and an adult son called Isaac. And for about the last 20 years, we've lived in Oxford in the United Kingdom and have been connected in various ways with Oxford University, studying there, working on various projects in the theology faculty, and now for Wycliffe Hall, which is a part of Oxford University. So I grew up in London, spent probably the first 17 years of my life in London. Then spent a period of time traveling, actually a while in the States, studied over here. My wife and I, after we married, spent a few years in Uruguay, in Latin America.
Hmm. How's your Spanish then? Is it pretty good?
It was okay. 20 years later, it's a little rusty. But yeah, we worked in Spanish down there, which was wonderful.
And now you're working with Wycliffe Hall and the Renaissance Project. A lot of people maybe have not heard of Wycliffe Hall. Hmm. They've heard of Oxford University. But Oxford is made up of lots of different colleges and organizations and such. How does Wycliffe Hall fit into that?
Yeah. So Oxford has around 40 constituent colleges, and Wycliffe Hall is one of a small subset of those that are called permanent private halls. And essentially, those are religious institutions that are part of Oxford University. So they function almost exactly like colleges. We can, you know, take students in a whole range of subjects, undergraduates and postgraduates. But alongside doing the academic work, we're also a Christian community that worships together, prays together, supports one another. So some of Wycliffe Hall's students are studying theology in order to go into ministry in the Anglican Church or other churches. Many others are studying theology at undergraduate level or postgraduate level. And then we also have the privilege of having, as part of our community, students who could be studying anything from nanotechnology through law and finance or whatever. That's, but they're doing Oxford University degrees.
But
in
they
a whole
work
range
with other
subjects.
Colleges as well for those kinds of courses.
They
right?
do. It works quite neatly in Oxford. So in Oxford, colleges or permanent private halls like Wycliffe are responsible for the teaching of their undergraduates. So you actually have to have subject specialists to teach them whatever it is that they're needing to learn, primarily in our case, biblical studies, theology, philosophy. But postgraduate teaching is the responsibility of faculties in the university. And what that means is that colleges can take postgraduates in any subject. They don't have to have subject specialists to teach them. They just have to provide their community in Oxford, and then the faculty is responsible for the teaching or the research or whatever. So that means that we can have a really diverse and engaging community without having to be physicists or nanotechnologists or whatever.
That's probably good for people like me, I suppose.
For me, definitely.
So the undergraduates you teach, you also have what we would say master's level program and PhD programs through Wycliffe Hall as well.
That's exactly right.
One of the things that you have been tasked to do is to direct this Renaissance project. We talked to Dr. Michael Lloyd, who is the principal there, a while back about that, but I wanted to go deeper with you. He said the person that I really needed to talk to was you, so I hope that's all right with you. You can blame him if you'd like to for that.
Yeah, I frequently blame Michael for lots of these things.
Oh, good, so, good. Yeah. And you gave an excellent talk here on the Renaissance project. I want to talk a little bit about what that is today and what the elements are as the person thinking about it, designing it, promoting it, eventually executing that project, which sounds to me like it's something that will take centuries to do, not just something that will happen within my lifetime or your lifetime, but it sounds like a big project. In 30 seconds, that's not fair. In 30 seconds, tell us what it is and let's talk about parsing it after that.
Yeah, so I think for precisely the reason that you've picked out, David, I like to make to distinguish between the Renaissance vision and the Renaissance project.
Okay, good.
And so the Renaissance vision, I think, is this huge, big picture, global kind of sense, or certainly let's talk about the West primarily, that we need a Renaissance of, you know, Christian culture and tradition, Christian identification, participation. We need more people to recognize what Michael often talks of as the humanity and the sanity of the Christian message. And that's something that no individual institution or person or even network or movement, you know, can bring about.
It really spans continents in a way.
It could,
right?
I think absolutely. It's just there's a recognition that we as Christians have something to share with the world that we're not doing a good job of sharing, and we want to be better at that.
I mean, when we think about the Renaissance, historically, we think about the Italian Renaissance. Mm-hmm. Are there things about this moment that resemble that moment?
Well, so I certainly think that Renaissance seemed to take place in times of crisis and turmoil and perhaps a lack of satisfaction with the status quo, you know, with cultures that either are or feel themselves to be, you know, perhaps in decline or simply in a difficult place. And I think that was true of the sort of 14th, early 15th century, you know, in the city-states of Italy and in other parts of Europe. And I think it's true now that there's a sense that, you know, we need to do better than we're doing. And so in that sense, I think there's some commonality. I think a point of difference might be that Italian or European Renaissance of the 15th century in some ways was funded by, you know, a sort of re-engagement with classical texts and sources and authors and thinking. And that brought new life into a culture that was ostensibly Christian, but perhaps it had become stagnant. And in some ways we feel, you know, need the reverse of that. We need a reintroduction, you know, of the beauty and glories and the truth of the Christian tradition back into our culture at this time. So there'd still be retrieval, so there's a kind of commonality there, but what we're retrieving might be different. So we need to find a way of re-engaging the culture with what scripture, Christian tradition, the Christian community has to offer.
Have you heard anything here in the other papers or presentations that you're going to be taking back to Wycliffe Hall?
I think there has felt like a real, you know, there are a lot of resonances. There's a lot of, you know, we're in the same situation. There are differences of degree or intensity between the US and the UK, but, you know, we're all experiencing this cultural moment where there's a lot of polarization, there's a lot of conflict, there's a lot of canceling of people we disagree with. So I think, you know, generally I've been encouraged by the fact that there are great people here doing great thinking and, you know, great working, you know, to address those challenges. The very last plenary talk that we heard was from David French, and he had this, you know, great concept, which he'd drawn, I think, from one of his Sunday school teachers, he said, you know, of orthocardia alongside orthopraxis and orthodoxy. So this sense that we need to get our hearts right at this moment in time, as well as having our doctrine right and our kind of Christian praxis right. And I think that resonated with me is, you know, we have to have the right attitude if we're going to re-engage culture. We have to have the right posture towards the world. And I thought he enunciated that really helpfully.
Yeah, I really appreciated French. I had not heard David French speak before, but I was impressed with the way he knit all that together. And one of the things that you talked about was the Renaissance Project in three realms: scholarship, leadership, and creativity. Take just a moment, unpack those for us.
So, I mean, to be honest, this is not a deeply researched position that we have. It's more a sense that if we are going to see this renewed engagement, ultimately some form of cultural transformation, that actually all of those things are essential. So this, you know, having Christians re-engaging as scholars, Christians re-engaging as leaders, Christians re-engaging as creatives in the arts and other forms of communication. And so I think the scholarship is just that recognition that most people don't think of turning to the church or to Christians when they want to address the most salient, pressing, important issues of the day. And clearly there is wonderful scholarship being done, you know, around the world by people who are not Christians. I mean, don't for a second want to downplay that and how grateful we are for all of the work that's being done. Nonetheless, we feel both that we have a particular perspective on the world because of our faith, we have a particular way of thinking about things, and that if we can learn to do the deep thinking and the deep scholarship and then communicate that well in the world, that will be a good for the world, it'll be valuable and helpful, but would also help to change the way that people think about Christianity in the church. So a sense that I think in our universities there's this idea of a kind of trickle down of thinking, that, you know, what's being done at the cutting edge in academia has downstream impacts in culture. So we want to make sure that there are Christians in that upstream place in academia developing the ideas.
Are there enough in Britain
of Christians in academia doing
this kind of level of work?
Well, there's certainly, you know, a good number of wonderful people within academia. Would we like to see more? Absolutely. And certainly, you know, one of our, you know, visions and priorities as part of the Renaissance Project at Wycliffe Hall is to mentor the next generation of academics across the whole range of subjects. That's why we love to open up the college to these people in totally different non-theological disciplines. It's because we feel, you know, if we want to see more faithful, thoughtful Christian academics in the future, we need to support them at these early stages of their career and their development and everything.
So whether teaching psychology, engineering, or
whatever
nanotechnology.
Yeah, exactly. We want Christians in all of those places. A colleague of mine, you know, recently described as, you know, we want Christians in the room on all of those conversations. Yeah. And so we're intending to do everything we can to support that.
There's some theoreticians and historians here in the U.S. that have made the same case. That if we really want to change culture and engage culture, we've got to be in the elite universities, places like, in the United States at least, Yale and Harvard and Princeton and Cornell and Stanford, places like that. And there have not been, for lots of reasons. Some of that has been the cultural antipathy between Christians at times and those in the academy. So I think on both sides of the Atlantic, we're looking at some of the same issues now. Let's mention the word creativity, though, for a moment. Why creativity?
Well, I think, again, something that we heard in the last session was a kind of analogy drawn, actually, by Jonathan Haidt, the psychologist, and he talks about, in the task of persuasion, that it's helpful to think of the elephant and the rider. And he talks about that as the rider, you know, the human, as it were, on the elephant being you know, the cognitive faculties, reason. And we often think that if we're going to persuade somebody, you know, we have to be able to reason them into our position, and that basically what we need are some nice, neat arguments and some helpful facts and some evidence on our side, and that's what's going to change somebody's mind. And this analogy says, well, no, actually, if we think of human persons, the reason is one thing, that's just like the rider, but there's also the elephant. And that if you're actually going to change somebody's direction, change somebody's mind, you need to talk to the elephant. And the elephant is everything other than your kind of cognitive faculties, your reason. It's your context, your upbringing, the way in which you were nurtured as a young person. It's your perhaps your cultural position, your ethnicity, your emotions, your will, everything else that makes us up. And if we're going to change the way people think, change the way they see the world, we've got to be able to address the totality of the person. And I think that arts are particularly effective in addressing people at that much deeper, perhaps pre-cognitive almost level, that touches people's emotions. It just does that, opens their eyes, maybe gives them the opportunity to experience the world through somebody else's eyes, if that's in literature or film. And again, if we, you know, if we want for the Christian voice, the Christian message, the good news of Jesus Christ to be heard, then we need to be talking not just to that narrow part of the person, the reason, but actually to the whole person. And I don't think we can do that without arts and creativity.
Yeah. No, I think you're exactly right. How does media fit into all that? The media is not really the creative side, but it is the persuasive side.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, we're still thinking through, you know, what the particular vocation of Wycliffe as an institution, as a community is. So we're fairly convinced at this stage we'd love to have a, you know, a community of creatives be part of our college community. And that we would love that to include, you know, visual artists and musicians, filmmakers, you know, who knows?
They're their storytellers.
Storytellers, right, exactly. Yeah. At the moment, I think we're intending to partner with others in the kind of the actual media communication sphere. You know, we have great friends and colleagues who, you know, already at work in how can we get the message out.
Right.
So I think that we're going to look at that. But clearly, you can have the most wonderful piece of art, and if it's locked away in somebody's back room and nobody ever sees it, it's not having much of an impact. So you, somehow you need to work out how do you propagate this? How do you get the word out?
So at Wycliffe Hall in particular, how do you go about fostering that vision?
Yeah. So I guess this is to come back to my earlier point of wanting to make this distinction between the Renaissance vision and the Renaissance project.
I mean, how do you... Because that's a big picture kind of thing.
It really is. And we're a small, you know, institution. We have the privilege of being part of Oxford University, which is a big institution, but we ourselves are small. And we love that and want to maintain that sense of community and intimacy because we think that's the kind of context out of which exciting things happen. So essentially for us, we can boil it down to we're going to increase our sort of research footprint, our research activity. We already have a fantastic group of academics, our tutorial fellows that are teaching and researching, but primarily in theology. So we want to move out and have Christian academics doing cutting-edge research across the range of endeavors, investigations. And then the second one, which is leadership, which we've perhaps talked less about, we have a very long history of training particularly church leaders. We want to work out how can we form and train Christians who are going to be leading in the whole breadth of contexts in culture and society.
So business and government.
Business and government and the arts, as you were saying, media, all of these things. You know, what can we offer to them that's going to equip them to serve Christ and witness to Christ and do good in the world as leaders in all those different spheres? And then finally, as I say, we want to have this actual community of creatives be part of us. And we believe that if we can bring in exceptional people and we can give them exceptional formation and training, then they can have an exceptional impact.
And that exceptional experience is possible through Oxford just simply by being the magnet that it is all around the world, bringing together some of the best and brightest. We're going to be tracking with you guys over the next few years, and we'll do a checkup from time to time on the Renaissance Project and to see how we are on the vision. Dr. Jonathan Brandt, thanks for being with us today on the Stone Chapel Podcast.
Thank you, David.
Stand by for a nugget of wisdom from Dr. Jonathan Brandt. Thanks to Jonathan Brandt for being with us on the Stone Chapel podcast. We'll watch with great interest what happens there. We need that kind of rebirth. Remember, we at the Stone Chapel podcast are joined the Church Leaders Podcast Network. There be various ways to find us, but the best way will be to go to churchleaders.com/podcast network. Once again, churchleaders.com/podcast network. Thanks to Phil Keggy for our music. Thanks to Kathy Capes, too, for being our great editor and transcriber on this podcast. But primarily, thanks to you for listening.
So I have a favorite saying that I think of a lot. It's attributed to many different people. I don't know who's actually the original source of it. But the saying is this, that there's a simplicity on the near side of complexity that's worthless, and there's a simplicity on the far side of complexity that's priceless. And I think as somebody who works a lot with ideas, works in academia, and is keen to be able to communicate those ideas, you know, beyond those whose job it is to study and read books and think deep thoughts, I love that sense that the people I really, really admire are able to take very complex ideas, work through them carefully, and then present them simply. And I think that's absolutely priceless. But sadly, we sometimes come across the other side as well, of people who take complex ideas and pretend that they're simple. And I think that's not so helpful. So I often think about, can I take this very complex idea, get beyond it, and present it in a way that's simple for people to understand and learn from and be changed by?